Rainbird, we can't hear you. Lady Master. Rainbird. Rainbird, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, now let me try.
No.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Friday Night Hard News Call with Tara and Rama. We're so grateful that you have joined us here tonight and to a great time in our lives. I'm Rainbird, and I'm doing the opening tonight, so I'd like for all of us to just take a moment, take a few deep breaths, and get into that heart-centered space. Let go of whatever we need to let go of. Be quiet in ourselves. Invite in our guides and angels and helpers to join us as we call in those seven sacred directions. So, welcome all you good ones of the East. Welcome. Thank you for joining us here tonight. Thank you for that rising sun, that promise of a new day, that promise of new beginnings. We are so grateful for our lives in this day and for all the changes at hand, and grateful for Miss Sarah and grateful for the White Knights and grateful for all the hearts and hands that help make this change, and grateful for those ones who are waking us up in the most profound and ways, and working with our hearts that way, that we all need to learn how to take an action or do take action. So thank you, all you good ones of the East. Thank you, Eagle, for that good eagle-eye vision and attention to detail. Thank you, Condor, connecting us to the sky, assisting us in that way, bringing that heaven to earth. So thank you, all you good ones of the East. Thank you for joining us here at this round table. And all you good gatekeepers of the North, welcome. Thank you. Thank you for your lives, and thank you for the way that you midwife us in this time of rebirth and birth of new ways. Thank you for all of that mentoring and encouragement. And thank you, Cold Hard Truth. We're grateful for you. We're grateful for looking at those edges like that. We're grateful for that enlightenment, knowledge, that it, wisdom that comes from that knowledge. So thank you to White Buffalo Calf Woman for bringing us that peace pipe way of making our prayers work for us and manifest. So thank you, all you good beings of the North. Thank you for joining us here tonight. All you good gatekeepers of the West, come join us here. We gather around this Rainbow Rose Round Table. We're grateful for our lives. We're grateful for that setting sun and that opportunity to go into that novel place and do the work that we do there. That place where we know the death end, so that there might be rebirth. Thank you, Bear, for taking us into that quiet place, that introspection. And thank you, Jaguar, for letting us ride on your time. I think this year of the horse, reminding us all the ways of power. So thank you, all you good ones of the West. Thank you for joining us. And all you good ones of the South, keepers. Oh, we're grateful for teen clan mothers. And we're grateful for all the gatherings, community, and the children, and the songs that we find in our hearts, our own songs. All of those healing ways and those healing plants and those ways to stay alive and fresh and renewed. So thank you, Rabbit, and Coyote, for being those little tricksters and reminding us to not take ourselves so seriously. Laugh more. So thank you, all you good ones of the South. Thank you. And Sky Nation, this way, we're so grateful for all of your lives. We're grateful for those brothers and sisters in space who are doing what they need to do at this time to make their lives even better. And we're grateful for all the rain, the lightning and the thunder, It makes things rumble and roll and change, lighting clear thought in each one of us, that lightning. Thank you. Thank you for joining us here tonight. We are so grateful. Thank you for letting us ride on your breath like that. We are so grateful for all of your beauty and your abundance and nourishment. We're grateful for your power and abilities. And we know you know how to shake things off. We're grateful that we can do our part to shake off what we need to shake off and make things better for all of us. We're grateful to be stewards and healers of this planet. Reverse the roles we've been by. Ho'oponopono. 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 So thank you for all your kingdoms and beauty and all the two-leggeds and four-leggeds and the winged ones and those creepy crawlies, that nana feeding us. Thank you for those high flyers, the winged ones. Thank you for all of your kingdoms and earth spirits. And thank you for Lamas, this holiday that is now, this holiday that where those veils are thin and where we can do some good work that way. We're grateful for these high holy holidays, these earth holidays that celebrate your being and your abundance and your being. So thank you. Thank you, Earth, for all your life. Ancestors, come, look this way. Thank you for joining us here tonight. All you ancestors, seven generations back and beyond. And all you ancestors, seven generations in front of us and beyond. We're so grateful for all of our lives. Thank you for all of your assistance. Thank you for those hints and whistles and whispers in our ear guiding us when we ask for it like that. We're grateful for all the ways you show up in our lives and grateful that you trusted us to be here at this time and this very important time. And we're grateful for all that assistance. Thank you for being us here tonight. Aho. So, I've been gathering with the permaculture people in my community. And it's been really touching experience to see all the different ways that we come to and work on healing the earth and work on taking action in our own hearts and our own lives. And I honor all these beings that live in this way, and living close to the earth and living in integrity. We're in that wave of integrity right now where we seek and true spirituality in this wave of peace. So a lot of gratitude for all of our lives. And I'd like to do a little bit of the housekeeping. As we are a listener-supported radio program, we each contribute each week, and we've done really well. This week, we only need $70 more. So I'd like to say that anything above that $70 is going to go to assist Tara and Rama with their needs as they want to start for next month's rent, which is a good plan. It's a good way to do that. And for their utilities as they show up. So we're grateful for that real ease and grace, the way the money flows in, and for all of you and all of your gifts. And grateful for you paying it forward like that. So let me give you all ways that you can do that. For BBS Radio, you can send a check or a money order through the mail, and that address is BBS Network, Incorporated, 5167 Toyon Lane, T-O-Y-O-N, and that's in Paradise, California, P-R-A-D-I-S-E, and the zip, 95969. And the other way is to use the computer route, bbsradio.com, click on Radio Station 2, scroll down and find the icon for one of our shows, the Stargate Roundtable or the Hard News Call on Friday, this one, or the Saturday Call with the History of Miss Sarah and our Galactic Origin. So any one of the to go. So as you're sending something to attention Don on the M, put a little that it talks to Marita's shows. And then the ways that you can relate to Tara and Rama is on the website is Rama's PayPal account, and that website address is 2013rainbowroundtable.ning.com. And there's a donate button on the homepage and another one just above the blog section. And that'll take you to Rama's PayPal. And then, as you would like to send a check or a money order in the mail, the address is Ram, R-A-M-D, as in David, Berkowitz, B-E-R-K-O-W-I-T-Z. And that's at 1704-B, Llano Street, L-L-A-N-O, number 249. And that's in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and the zip there is 87505. And then as you want to send something to the or need a phone number, contact. That would be Marita at 317-773-0061. And as you're sending something in the mail or either way, send them a little note that Coran 9999 at hotmail.com. So that's a new email address. Pay attention to that. Coran9999@hotmail.com. And then as you're wanting a reading or some such thing with a session with Mother Sekhmet and Tara and Rama, then you can make a contact through the email or by calling Marita and Nikki in that way. And those are fun and wonderful and very can be very helpful. So that's one thing you could do for half the trade, if you like. However you want to pay it forward, we are so grateful. We are grateful for all the blessings that come your way in your lives as you do your work. And so thank you for being here, and thank you for all the support so that we can do this good work here. So I pass the talking stick to you, Tara and Rama. Greetings.
Greetings.
Aloha, everybody. Oh, time is collapsing on itself. Yes, everything that you're seeing out there that looks like a horror story is to be expected because their rigor mortis has set in on their banking system. It went down another 150 points today, so that's 3 days this week. Monday down over 100, Wednesday down 250, or was that Thursday? Was that yesterday, 250? And then today, 150. Let's see, 250, 350, 400. 500 points this week. Yay, rah, everybody. But, it goes up and down in between it. Nonetheless, they are trying to keep every trick in the book up their sleeve to keep it going, and it's not that easy.
No, it's not.
And we're going to listen to something from Conversations with Great Minds, you know, this evening right now, you know, before we go to the next hour, because what's going on there is that we're getting a much more realistic point of view as to how far gone the fossil fuel systems are and what must be done right now. And again, don't look around for somebody else to do it, Tag. We are it.
Time for free energy.
Yes, this is true. In the meantime, there's many ways to skin a cat.
Watch it.
And I mean, the inundations from so much water in the atmosphere from using so much excessive fossil fuels. There's a place in India called Maharashtra. It's a really remote valley, and there are, you know, like, there's just dozens and dozens of homes that got buried in a landslide. They started off with 17 dead. They expect 150 at least to, you know, be declared dead. And the monsoons are on top of that. And then in Europe, there's massive flooding by torrential rain. It's killed 3 in Romania and 4 are missing in Bulgaria. And Romania's environmental authority said rivers are at levels seen about every 200 years. Hundreds of villagers have fled their homes. Italy is flooding from the rains. In Belgium, there's a little province. It's called Vlaams-Brabant province. And they got very improvisational there. They took a derrick with the big shovel, and they just scooped up about 7 or 8 people in the shovel, and then they lifted it up and they moved the derrick through the water and went and put people where it was a little drier.
Right.
How funny. That was pretty cute. They had about 7 or 8 people each time. Nonetheless, this is ridiculous. And Russia's given a very swift and sharp response to the European Union's sanctions against Moscow. The Kremlin has warned it is prepared to raise the energy prices as a consequence to the European Union. In other words, the cost of getting the energy that they're used to, and they have well over a third of their energy in all of Europe comes from Russia, everybody. So I'm sure he's jacking up the price, just hunky-dory.
Yeah.
And Putin said the measures would boomerang and harm Europe's own fragile, ever so fragile, economic recovery. And despite the United States sanctions on 5 banks in Russia and the energy sectors included, the G7 leaders have issued a joint statement expressing grave concerns about Russia's actions to determine Ukraine's sovereignty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when is that old story going to wear out? You know, that it's all Russia's fault, folks. I'm just saying, it's not true.
No.
And already Russia has imposed an import ban on fruits and veggies from Poland. And it claims that the produce was infested with bugs and contaminated with pesticides. Not so cool. So far, Russia has taken its sanctions in stride. Even Russian banks, hardest hit by measures, reacted calmly. They say they will switch to other currencies and other markets as necessary.
That brings in a basket of currencies.
Well, not yet, but BRICS is the next best thing.
Right.
You know, he can use
Bitcoin.
Well, I don't know if Putin's going to do that or not. But the Russian Central Bank says it will support banks hit by the penalties. So I don't think this will harm us, because Russia has enough reserves to support these banks. That was somebody that was speaking from that sector of Russia. And a Russian woman said, I am concerned about my own savings and the situation appears to be a bit unstable. Mm-hmm. We don't quite know what to expect. I'm just going to say, Putin is a very smart dude. Yeah. And he's way ahead of this game. The German government believes the sanctions will work quickly. It says they are unavoidable, even as they may be painful for the German economy. The Kremlin says sanctions are unfair. It rejects accusations that it's responsible for the conditions in the Ukraine and supporting the rebels. Nada, nada. And the United States and the European Union see things very differently. Somebody appeared to have said, don't forget Putin and Obama and President Xi of China are working very closely together and doing it in a way that it's not visibly known to the powers that were, i.e. 13 families, etc. Very clever little characters working behind the scenes. So, of the great big bunch of O's. Lord Rama, what do you want to tell us?
Well, today I spoke with those two folks that supposedly are dead, but they're not dead.
Don't even die. That's right. With yeah. Sam Cedar, right off the air.
That's right. And let's just say this very ancient story that goes back before Lemuria, it's coming to a conclusion, and it's being waged right now in this land, which is supposedly called Judea, which is really Palestine, and Yeshu and Magdalene really came to Cusco. And the story about this Palestine is fiction.
Well, not the Palestine, but the Jerusalem.
Yeah.
That's calling itself Jerusalem. I saw a documentary years ago, and they said there's little to no artifacts to prove, you know, in the archaeological sense, that that's Jerusalem. Little to no. They've got a few little shards here and then of some dated pottery, but it absolutely has no proof whatsoever on that other level.
And then
very interesting.
Then there's all kinds of other stories that folks that are geomancy and earth scientists that follow the ley lines, and they follow the ley lines that go from the Ireland and from Glastonbury Tor and the cathedral all the way down to Israel and the Dome of the Rock, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And
yeah, what's that line called again?
The Mary Line or something like that, possibly.
No.
I don't know.
Penny knows.
The Rose Line.
The Rose Line. There we go. We got a kitty named Rosie that we're feeding here.
That's right. Lady Master Rose. And, well, what they were saying today, Dodie and Di, is just that ceasefire was toast even before it began, because Israel created the situation saying that Hamas had captured an Israeli soldier, Bull Pucky. They set it up to blame Hamas once again.
And there was this representative of the Hamas again. I forgot his name. Hamdan. And he was on Al Jazeera, and he said that what's going on is that as the Israeli soldiers are really going into dangerous territory and killing civilians from the ground, they're getting killed. They're getting killed even at times by friendly fire from the air. And this thing about there were two soldiers that I can't remember. There's so many stories.
But yeah.
Nonetheless, there was another report that said that that other civilians got killed in this one attack, and that those two soldiers were amongst those people, and that as that were actually true, they were both killed. That actually finding them is a big question mark.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't know if anybody got away or anything, but it certainly is absolutely obvious that
I
you
think
can't
I told you more than I on, can remember at the moment.
Yeah,
about,
keep can't even keep saying, you know, instantaneously it's all Hamas that did this, that, and the other. Lady Di and Doty and Sam were chiming in here, said there is an absolute out-and-out media frenzy to jump on the fake war machine. And they likened it to what happened in 9/11's little field of media frenzy, where at that time they blamed it on Islamic terrorism, and then there's Osama and the fake Al-Qaeda computer program that they, you know, exercised their rights of whatever to speak about. And then at the time, they needed a Reichstag fire. So the reason for going after after this little setup at 9/11 was because they wanted, they actually, what they really wanted were the all the secret documents that Lady Di has committed to memory in her head.
All the secret dossier account numbers for the 78 programs that are in the hands of beloved ascended master Saint Germain.
And remember, all those accounts were in a computer system on the first floor below Ground Zero.
Right.
And all those people were murdered. And the whole thing apparently went bye-bye. But what is absolutely clear is that the King of Swords has every record on the hard copy. So, and
yes,
there's more than one set. Plenty more. So there's no way they're going to get that one obliterated. So Lady Di's got them memorized from one end of her head to the other. That's pretty interesting. Now, we need a World War III, or they think they need a World War III. And Saint Germain has a duplicate on the ship, on his own Amethyst.
That's right.
Too. There's no way these guys get away with this stuff. Anyway, so then, it's time. We better go play this. We want to play something. But to reduce the population and make more profit, have greed and control going on, and to try to stop the market collapse, because the more times you do killings and wars, the more profits you can make where you need it. So all of those above reasons. And to get rid of people that they don't want in their way. They want everybody gone in Palestine. They want all the land for settlements, and they want all the land and the new discovered oil and gas reserves. So we're going to listen about oil and gas reserves, because this story is way bigger than this. Let's do it right now because we don't have a chance any other way. I'll just push this button now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because we won't get to otherwise. Okay, can you kind of move so we don't talk to them? Turn that the other way. Yeah.
It's coming.
Tonight's Conversations with Great Minds, I'm joined by Richard Heinberg, one of the most influential experts on the future of the fossil fuel economy. Currently the senior fellow in residence at the Post Carbon Institute, Richard is widely known for his work on peak oil. He's published articles in some of the country's leading scientific journals, and since 2002 has delivered over 500 lectures on fossil fuels and the impact they're having both on our planet and our economy. The recipient of the King Hubbard Award for Excellence in Energy Education, Richard Heinberg, is also the author of 11 books, including his latest, Snake Oil, How Fracking's False Promise of Plenty Imperils Our Future. Richard Heinberg, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Very good to be speaking with you again, Tom.
Thank you. Let's start out with you. What got you interested in fossil fuels and the whole climate policy issue?
Well, you know, I started out roughly 20 years ago trying to figure out, just for my own satisfaction, what the Industrial Revolution was all about. I mean, it's obvious that life has changed profoundly in the last couple of hundred years compared to how people lived, you know, prior to the Industrial Revolution. Everything has changed. But how do you explain that? Is it just technology? Is it the advent of capitalism? I finally realized the obvious, which is that it's basically all about energy. Fossil fuels gave us an energy subsidy that was completely unlike anything we'd ever had in previous times. The energy-dense, convenient, cheap energy of oil, coal, and natural gas was completely unlike the energy of firewood or domesticated animals using their muscle power or even human slavery. And all of those energy sources that we had used previously were almost trivial in comparison with the energy that we could get from fossil fuels. And energy is what makes the world move. So with lots of cheap, concentrated energy, planes, trains, automobiles, economic growth, basically life as we know it today became possible.
Yeah, I've referred to that as ancient sunlight. These are actually fossil fuels. Most people, if they were to put a drop of gasoline in their hand while they're filling their gas tank, which I don't recommend, the stuff is poisonous, but still, they would be looking at a fossil. Can you riff on that a little bit?
Right. Well, of course, fossil fuels were made not from dead dinosaurs, but they resulted from actually a couple of brief, fairly brief periods of extreme global warming, 60 or 80 and 150 million years ago. Well, for oil in particular, with coal, it's a bit of a different story. And these were, oil was formed from basically tiny aquatic plants that died, and as their numbers bloomed with the warmth of the environment, they sucked all of the oxygen out of the ocean water, so that when they died and fell to the bottom of the oceans, they, rather than just decomposing, they built up and up and up into a geologically significant formations that were gradually covered over with sediments and compressed and cooked by nature over time, so that carbohydrates became hydrocarbons, and the rest is history.
Yeah. You won the King Hubbard Award. King Hubbard, back in the 1950s, predicted that in, as I recall, 74, please correct me if I'm wrong, but that in any case, at some point in time, we would hit peak oil in the United States and that the world would hit peak oil slightly later than that. Whatever happened to that?
Well, he was right about the U.S. He suggested U.S. oil production would peak around 1970, and it did. It's recovered a bit just in the last 5 years, and we can talk about that later. But he also forecast that global oil production would peak around the year 2000, which it probably would have if it hadn't been for the oil shocks of the 1970s, which reduced our rate of consumption of oil very considerably. Really, the more recent and more credible oil depletion analysis was carried out by two veteran petroleum geologists named Colin Campbell and Jean-La Herrera. I think they figured in your book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. Well, I followed their work for many years. Colin has suggested for the last 20 years that world conventional oil production would peak around 2005 to 2010, which it did. But then the suggestion back then was that that would cause oil prices to go up, which it did. Oil prices have risen very substantially in the last 10 years. And then those higher oil prices would spark the search for unconventional oil sources like tar sands, deep water oil, tight oil, shale oil, and so on. That's also happened. And so the boom in unconventional oil is what we're experiencing right now. And Jean-Laurère figures that that boom will probably peter out around 2015, 2016, something like that. Again, these are forecasts that go back 20 years, and so far they've been pretty much spot on.
In the late 90s, there was a lot of discussion about this, a lot of concern about peak oil and the idea that we needed to change to non-oil energy sources, non-fossil. I mean, everybody knew that there were huge coal reserves, but even those are limited, more like a couple hundred years out, if my recollection is correct. And that was an impetus to look at things like wind and solar. I haven't heard that conversation in a long time. Why is that?
Well, what happened is that around 2005, as regular conventional oil production started to stall out, and then in 2008, when the price of oil got bid up to almost $150 a barrel, suddenly people were talking about peak oil. It was being seriously discussed in the U.S. Department of Energy and business pages of Wall Street Journal and all over the place. But then when U.S. tight oil production started to ramp up in the last 3-4 years, suddenly, the industry had a talking point. The industry's always hated the idea of peak oil, because if we were to take it seriously, the notion that world oil production is about to stall out and go into a nosedive, if we took that seriously, everybody would, you know, start using less oil any way they possibly could, buy smaller cars, move closer to where they work and shop, do anything they could, because clearly, this is a fuel source with a expiration date. So the industry seized upon U.S. tight oil production in the Bakken fields of Dakota and the Eagle Ford play in South Texas as evidence that of a game changer. With technology, we had solved the problem of peak oil, and with hydrofracturing and horizontal drilling, we'd be able to produce enough oil for not only the U.S. but the world to enjoy plentiful supplies for decades to come. Now, the evidence is not really there to support those conclusions, but nevertheless, U.S. oil production has increased by about 3 million barrels a day in the last 3-4 years, and that has basically saved our bacon in terms of the economy. If it hadn't been for the increase in U.S. tight oil production, world total oil production would be flat to slightly declining right now, and we'd be seeing much higher oil prices and the economic consequences of that.
Which would be inflation, recession, the things that we saw in the 70s after the oil.
Right. Well, you look back historically, every time we've had an oil price spike, we've had a recession as a result or accompanying it. Even the most recent price spike in 2008 that I mentioned earlier went up to almost $150 a barrel. Now, of course, there were other things going on. There was a real estate price bubble and so on. But the oil price spike by itself would almost certainly have provoked a recession. And why is it so hard for the economy to recover these days, even with massive bailouts and interventions by the Federal Reserve? Well, it's partly because we have historically high oil prices. Oil, instead of being $10 or $20 a barrel, is $100 a barrel. It's very hard for the economy to grow under those circumstances.
Is it possible, as alternatives to oil become less expensive, that we could see the kind of revival renewal that we saw during the last 150 years, as, in the era of oil? I think it was 1856, Colonel Colonel, what's his name? Colonel Drake. Yeah, he drilled the first oil well in Titusville, Pennsylvania, and kicked the whole thing off.
Yeah. Well, certainly we need alternative energy sources, renewable energy sources like wind and solar, and they have been growing rapidly in the last few years, not as much in the last 2 years, unfortunately. But the problem is that electricity doesn't fuel the transport sector and the agriculture sector so well. The problem is the energy density of batteries is much lower than the energy density of liquid fuels, almost an order of magnitude lower. So we're never going to see electric-powered airplanes, for example. Well, I mean, an airplane that might carry one or two people, but not an electric airliner that carries 300 people at a time. It's just not going to happen. Electric cars, yes, that does work, but electric 18-wheelers that bring to the grocery store and the furniture to the mall and all of that sort of thing, it's much more difficult. Same thing with tractors for agriculture, earth-moving equipment, and so on. We really are systemically hooked on oil in a way that's more profound than is the case with the electric power generation sector. It's going to be easier to replace coal and natural gas for power generation with solar and wind than it will be to replace oil in transportation and agriculture.
And yet this stuff, not only being a fossil, but it's also a limited supply, is absolutely essential to make things work, at least given the current state of things and the current state of technology. I'd like to get into what some alternatives might mean for that. How do we deal with that in just a moment? More of our conversations with great minds with Richard Heinberg right after. His most recent book, Snake Oil, How Fracking's False Promise of Plenty Imperils Our Future. He's also a senior fellow in residence at the Post Carbon Institute. Richard, you were talking about in the last segment how oil is so essential to transportation and agriculture, and yet it is a finite resource. We are approaching peak oil, or have already hit it, arguably, in the United States. And what do we do about that?
Well, ultimately, we're going to have to learn how to use less. There's no question about that. Of course, the industry would like us to think that there's no problem, that oil supplies are sufficient, and even if there is some kind of difficulty with oil production, then we can always fall back on powering the transport sector with natural gas. But we at Post Carbon Institute see that as actually just as big a problem. The transformation of the natural gas industry over the past few years toward much greater reliance on unconventional gas, mostly in the form of shale gas, has been really dramatic.
Gas.
Yeah, exactly, using hydrofracturing or fracking and horizontal drilling to produce natural gas from tight rocks, usually shale. These are geologic formations that we knew about for a long time, but there was no incentive to get that gas out because it was so much cheaper and easier to produce conventional natural gas. Well, conventional natural gas in the U.S. is declining very substantially, and currently half of our national natural gas production is coming from these shale resources. And again, we're told that there's an abundance of this stuff that'll last 100 years, but the evidence is just not there to support those assertions.
So what do we, well, if, first of all, if natural gas is going through the same cycle that oil went through, King Hubbard back in the 50s was able to, put together this, that, and the other thing, look at all the data points and all the information from around the world and the United States and predict when we would hit peak oil, and he was pretty damn accurate. Has anybody done that work with regard to fracked gas? Do we know when peak fracking is going to occur?
Well, actually, we've done that work at Post Carbon Institute. We purchased the proprietary rights to the drilling information on over 65,000 wells that are currently fracked and horizontally drilled in various geologic formations in the United States. We looked at the location of each well, the initial production rate, the evolution of production over time. What we found is that within each of these geologic formations, there's a small core area, or you could call it a sweet spot, where initial production is fairly prolific. And it continues for a while. Outside of those sweet spots, initial production rates are much lower and production declines very rapidly. Actually, for all shale gas, production tends to decline much more rapidly than for conventional natural gas. So we're talking about a decline in production of maybe 70% or more in the first year. So that means companies that drill for shale gas have to drill and drill and drill in order just to keep production flat. In many ways, this is almost like a real estate bubble, a sort of pump and dump scheme. It sort of goes like this. First, you borrow some money, go out and purchase thousands of acres of drilling leases, and borrow some more money and go in and drill a bunch of wells and start producing shale gas or tight oil. Then you say, looky here, we're producing all this unconventional oil and gas, and there's lots of this stuff. Everybody's going to get rich. That raises the value of those assets. And then even if the company isn't making money on actual production of product, which is the case for most of these companies that are actually heavily in debt and not making money on sales of product because it's so expensive to produce this stuff, then what they do is to turn around and sell off their assets, which are the drilling leases, to other companies that are, you know, later getting into the game. Most of the companies that specialize in producing shale gas and tight oil are heavily indebted and are showing negative cash flow on actual production, but manage to stay profitable through sales of assets. So this is almost the definition of a bubble.
Wow. What kind of time frame are we looking at? Is this bubble going to burst in 2 years, 10 years, 30 years?
Well, our analysis suggests that the available good drilling sites are being drilled out pretty rapidly in most of these plays. Some of
is
the
this
shale
just
gas
in the United States, you mean, or around the world?
In the United States.
Okay.
Some of the shale gas plays in the U.S. are already in decline. And within the Bakken tight oil play in North Dakota, for example, it's really all up to one county. And when that county is drilled out, McKenzie County, then effectively North Dakota's oil production is going to go into decline. So we're not talking about decades. We're talking about a few years, almost certainly before the end of the current decade.
Wow. Yeah, I think most Americans don't realize that back, you know, a century ago, from New Jersey across Pennsylvania all the way to Michigan and Ohio, there were all these oil wells.
Right.
And, you know, Penn's oil was Pennsylvania oil. There was a lot of oil there, and then they just drilled it all out. It's all gone. So you're talking about that same thing. So as a response to this, what do we do? You've talked about economic growth being over, a post-growth world where our economy for centuries has been built on growth. Is that a solution to say, hey, wait a minute, stasis is a good idea?
Well, actually, even though economies have been growing since the beginning of the fossil fuel era, just a couple of centuries ago, we didn't get hooked on economic growth as we now think of it until pretty much the third quarter of the 20th century, after World War II, basically. We adopted GDP, or gross domestic product, as a measure of economic health. And economic growth became sort of the be-all and end-all. Every politician promises more economic growth. We have our financial institutions, government financing, all depending upon economic growth. And yet, you know, we live on a finite planet. And if energy sources are not able to continue to give us more and more abundant, cheap energy, then there isn't the basic physical wherewithal to maintain economic growth as we've known it over this historically very short period of time. So what is likely to happen is we'll revert to the norm. If you look back further in history, essentially people have lived pretty much the same from generation to generation. This was the pre-economic growth era. We will revert to that norm one way or another, whether it's through a planned kind of steady state economy or whether it's simply through economic, you know, failure and contraction, recession after recession, each one getting a little bit worse until we're living within nature's budget of energy and resources.
If you look at the story of the Maori or in New Zealand or numerous Native American tribes and other Aboriginal people, I mean, there's no shortage of these stories. They find an area that's rich in natural resources or lots and lots of moa birds to eat. Go nuts for a couple of generations, eat the place to death, kill off all the easily available animals, and then basically their economy crashes. And then typically, New Zealand got interrupted in this process, although New Caledonia didn't. They figure out how to live in equilibrium with their environment. Is that the sort of thing that you're proposing?
Right. That's a great observation, because some of us tend to think of indigenous peoples as sort of intuitive ecologists. You know, they have all this traditional ecological wisdom. Well, why is that? It's because they lived in one place long enough to bump up against these ecological limits, and they realized through trial and error that we have to respect those limits. Now, fossil fuels have been an amazing gift. They've enabled us to do things we wouldn't otherwise have been able to do. A lot of people got rich. We developed technologies, communication, on and on and on. But they've also propelled us into a situation of ecological overshoot. In other words, we've increased our rates of consumption above what the Earth can sustainably provide. So that means one way or another, we've got to rein ourselves back in as a species until we are within Earth's sustainable budget of resources.
So let's take this out of the abstract. What's step one? What do we do?
Well, step one is to look at fossil fuels themselves, because we face two enormous challenges with fossil fuels. First, the fact that they're finite, which we've been talking about, and also the problem that as we burn them, we release carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, change the climate. So we know we have to get off of fossil fuels, and doing so is going to change our economy. It's not like we can, you know, unplug fossil fuels and plug in renewable energy sources and just keep living exactly the way we are right now. It's not going to work that way. We're going to have to rethink agriculture, transportation, finance, and all the other big sectors of our economy. Agriculture, because right now we have a food system that's overwhelmingly dependent on fossil fuels. Transportation, the same thing. Our financial system is hooked on perpetual growth to pay off investors with ever larger interest and returns on investments. None of that is going to work in a post-growth, post-carbon, or post-fossil fuel society. That doesn't mean it's
Richard,
the end of the
Richard,
world.
we just have a minute left.
Yeah.
Do you see any way we can make this transition to a world that works without first there being a crash?
We'll have to do that last minute. We'll have to do that last minute when we come back at the top of the hour with Mother. But right now we're going to our phone conference line for an hour, and then we'll be back. The number for the conference line is 213-342-3000, and the PIN code is for tonight 23-23-23-pound. We'll see you at the top of the next hour back here at the best radio in the universe. Satnam, everybody.